Hello, my name's Tim Abbott, and this is Technical Difficulties from the Wormhole, Light Chronicles production headquarters in Brixton Hill. I came back from holiday from South Africa, to be exact, between the two series of this programme, and on returning from this holiday, I again was struggling to deal with the difference between the UK and other warmer climates. Vivid memories of less pain-filled days were also a bit of an issue. And this is what I wrote. It is difficult to get respite from something fundamental to my physical self, to my health. Floating, letting the sea take the weight, bathing in the sun's caress of my exhausted muscles. Even in this freezing point evening in England, the muscle memory of relaxation remains, freedom from pains, and all the energy it drains. Keep your head up. And keep your feet on the floor. I have to say, lessons taught mainly that infrastructure may well be a major issue in South Africa, but people can make an amazing difference to the ability of physical infrastructure to affect a situation. I struggled in certain situations and would have been disabled by them were it not for the good work of the individual people involved. So I have to say thank you to Charmaine and John at Shojolosa Mail for sorting out the rail problem, and to Flippy at the Europrime for his candid opinions on things. But it does remain true that in the absence of infrastructure, disability can be reinforced. Nonetheless, if my journey back into this country taught me one thing, it is that the existence of physical infrastructure and good governance in one country does not necessarily make that country disability friendly. Hello, Great Britain. And specifically BAA Heathrow. It is an issue that I have picked up specifically with the airports themselves, but the assistance lounge on the way back in was a complete shambles, and hopefully I will hear back from that particular operator at some point, and when I do I will share that with you. Between Johannesburg and London, there was a 30-degree temperature difference. And that was never massively advantageous for those of us that feel... those of us that are struggling with changes in circumstance. And therefore, it brings me to my first news item that was brought forth by the people of the Cochrane collaboration, that a comprehensive review of 15 trials dating from 1984 all the way through till the present day and involving over 1,000 people has reinforced the conclusion that zinc is a very effective barrier against the effects of a cold. When syrup, lozenges or tablets are taken within a day of the onset of cold symptoms, it's been clinically proven to reduce the severity and length of the illness. At 7 days, more of the patients who took zinc had cleared their symptoms compared to those who took placebos. Children who took zinc syrup or lozenges for 5 months or longer caught fewer colds and took less time off school. Zinc also reduced antibiotic use in children, which is important because overuse has implications for antibiotic resistance. The lead researcher, Menu Singh, of the Postgraduate Institute at the Medical Education and Research in Chandigarh, India, added, "Further research should focus on the benefits of zinc in defined populations, the review suggests." But nonetheless, it has to be said, it's logical to suggest that zinc should be taken as a precautionary measure. Protection against the cold weather. Let's hope the cold weather isn't with us for that much longer here in the UK. But nonetheless, just to reiterate, zinc has been proven to both protect against and to ameliorate the effects of colds. Thank you once again to the Cochrane Library for that information. Less edifying news reaches us from the world of the Broken of Britain once more. And I quote, "We received a message from a 60-year-old British lady who worked all her life, paid her taxes and her national insurance until 4 years ago when she became disabled. Despite being in receipt of disability living allowance, she has been deemed fit for work by the Work Capacity Assessment and placed onto Job Seekers Allowance, where, for the past 4 years, her local job centre staff have witnessed how hard she has fought to enter paid employment. Now she is being forced to work 37 and a half hours a week, voluntarily, to receive her benefits. She tells me that she doesn't mind this, and that in fact she is more than happy to contribute to society in return for her benefits, but that the work she is expected to do is heavy manual labour, gardening alongside young offenders and substance abusers, work she is simply not physically capable of carrying out. If she doesn't comply with this work, then she will lose her Job Seekers Allowance. If she does comply with the work, she risks further injury or being deemed ineligible for her Disability Living Allowance because she's attempted to comply with rules for other benefits. Once this lady loses her DLA, she will become homeless since the money is used to cover the shortfall in her rent in the private sector. She won't be entitled to local authority housing because she's older, but not old enough, because she's childless and because there's simply a massive shortage of local authority housing. So she faces a stark choice. She either complies with work that she's physically incapable of doing, or she risks losing her home. Once she loses her home, she'll also likely lose her eligibility for DLA because she'll have no address. If that happens, she'll no longer be able to pay for prescription charges for the medications which keep her alive, nor will she be able to keep her assistance dog, so she will be living on the streets without hearing, without assistance, without money, and quite understandably, she wishes to die instead of that. As of the 17th of this month, the lady in question has been called to a meeting to discuss alternatives after much correspondence querying whether her disabilities and care needs have been taken into account when deciding upon this placement, which is fantastic news. However, what is less positive are the accounts of similar situations coming into the Broken of Britain team, making it clear this is not an isolated incident. And for those of us in Light Chronicles here, we share your pain. This is Technical Difficulties, Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Tim Abbott. Let's get back on the positive for a moment, in that, if slightly odd news, that the brother of Lewis Hamilton, the McLaren Formula One driver, a man with cerebral palsy, is embarking on a motorsport career himself. Nicholas Hamilton will race for Total Control Racing in the Renault Clio Cup. The 19-year-old said, I know this will not be an easy task, but my hope is that by doing this it will give inspiration to others. Watching my brother achieve so much has given me inspiration. Close quote. Nicholas Hamilton recently gained his National B race license and has already tested a 2010 spec Clio Cup car. He will start testing ahead of the season at Brands Hatch on the 2nd to 3rd of April. The Clio Cup is seen as a testing ground for the British Touring Car Championship, which is saloon cars. And for me personally, I find this fascinating, given that cerebral palsy is my condition. And I have to drive a car. If I drove a car, I would drive one with an adapted steering system. No mention of which is made in any of the coverage that I've read about Nicholas's condition. The suggestion was that the only adaptation would be the brake pedal, because he can't put his foot to the floor with the same pressure. So, I repeat again, it will be interesting to see exactly what he does and to what extent. And for all of us, I think it's a good thing to wish for. Let's hope he has a successful start to his career. And possibly people don't notice that there's an issue there to be dealt with. As we often say, we all have technical difficulties. Let's hope Nicholas Hamilton can overcome his. Talking of the slogans of this show, I have become aware that I haven't actually, at any point, embarked upon the full version of the poem whence the slogan for the show originated. Actually, on my walking stick it says, I wear your scars with pride. So, this poem was originally written on the 18th of May last year, at approaching 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I wear my scars with pride. I did nothing wrong and have survived, and carried on to live my life. I wear my scars with pride, although I may not always cope when the pain that they were born from puts oil on a slippery slope. I wear my scars with pride because they are the story of my life. Pain is experience lived, and the scars are evidence of the strife. I wear my scars with pride. It took me a while, and I'm not there yet, but I'm in the last mile. I have scars under clothing, under hair, or under my skin, soul, and mind, but I do not want to hide. I wear my scars with pride. The directions of that particular poem came from a few years of me venting my spleen, my frustration at the disabled world, into poetry, and I've often done this as a cathartic device. Originally, in 1996, I wrote a poem that actually got published in a book, more as a criticism of the division between the able-bodied world and the disabled world, and that you couldn't be in the middle. And at that time, my disability didn't hurt, and so I would have considered myself, in hindsight, probably not disabled, but I had the same physical condition. And so I always said I was between two precipices. So this was the poem, Between Two Precipices. Difference is neither here nor there. What gives them a right to stop and stare? What gives permission to the top brass to treat these citizens second class? stereotyped straight away as those will need special help today. Sometimes they just need a slight chance to taste a little independence. Why don't some people heed that you might not be disabled or able-bodied? Life is not as it may seem. You may not be either extreme. Stuck in the middle of the handicapped. Victims of a lifetime trapped. To borrow from Jasmina Tsarnovich's superb book, Diary of a Political Idiot, I have always found that poetry is a biological urge to avoid pain, or perhaps to express it. The most recent... No. Aside from the Wearing Scars with Pride poem prior to that point, and during a period when I was struggling incredibly badly with pain after my night shift, I wrote a poem called Rallying Cry. What do you do when you can't find silence? When all the waking thoughts turn to violence, the violence of chronic pain, when unbidden it comes again and again, when every solution causes more queries and life goes on and wearies. You take control of yourself because your health is your health. You raise your head and put a smile on your face and remember, you are part of the human race. So, remember, you are part of the human race. For the Technical Difficulties crew, I'm Tim Abbott. Details of all the musings from my mouth on lightchronicles.info and full details of this programme will also be there and at resonancefm.com when I get it sorted out. Wear your scars with pride, and remember, we all have technical difficulties, but without rain, there would be no rainbow. Goodbye.
Hello. Mensch, ist ja ein Wunder, dass wir uns heute bei dem Wetter hier draußen begegnen, ne?
Weil die Leute, die wollen halt Sonne haben und keinen Regen, ne?
Ja genau, und sie regen sich unheimlich auf, gehen schon bei Niesel nicht mehr aus dem Haus.
Und dabei wusste bereits unsere Mutter, Junge, geh raus, du bist nicht aus Zucker.
Ich hab ne schöne Regenjacke und die trage ich rund um die Uhr.
Ich bade in der Natur,
nur schade um die Frisur.
Doch auch wenn das nah, lassen wir den Kopf nicht hängen und sehen nach oben.
Wenn es regnet und die Sonne scheint, dann kommt der Regenbogen.
Ohne Regen kein Regenbogen, danke zu sehen für jeden Idioten. Denn der sieht so naturfreudig aus. Wir steigen in auf und stehen ganz oben, oben auf dem Regenbogen. Wir freuen uns und die Natur freut sich auch.
Ich stell mir immer vor, wenn es zum Beispiel die Wettervorhersagen gibt im Fernsehen. So, und da sagen die immer an, heute zum Beispiel regnet es. Und die Leute beschweren sich immer andauernd und sagen, der blöde Regen, da kann der Regen auch nichts für. Was soll das? Ohne den Regen gibt es keine Natur. Das ist doch ganz logisch. Und genau so möchte ich, dass die Natur immer erhalten bleibt und dass die immer so bleibt, wie sie jetzt ist.
Weil du allein in Tasse sitzt in deinem schrägen Haus, skeptisch aus dem Fenster blickst und denkst, ich geh nicht raus. Es knallt, es donnert und blitzt und sieht verdammt nach Regen aus. Und dir fällt auf, dass du mal neue Tapeten brauchst.
Ohne Regen kein Regenbogen, deutlich zu sehen für jeden Idioten. Denn der sieht so naturfreudig aus. Wir steigen hinauf und stehen ganz oben, oben auf dem Regenbogen. Wir freuen uns und die Natur freut sich auch.
Regenbogen.
Du willst ja auch noch die Farben wissen.
Blau. Wie der Himmel, das Meer, deine Augen, das T-Shirt von Sibi, ein Tag ohne Job.
Grün.
Bäume, der Rasen, die Umwelt, ein Blatt, ein gewöhnlicher Frosch.
Gelb.
Die Sonne, Banane, Zitrone, noch weiteres Obst in die Post.
Rot.
Wie die Liebe, Tomaten und Mettwurst, wenn's peinlich wird, auch mal der Kopf.